So hi everyone, we are here in Las Vegas at the MIX conference, so, and also talking about Silverlight and MVVM, and validation of course. What could be any better in this late hour? Yeah, a lot of things, but if you are talking about development, then nothing else. So, as you have probably noticed by now, English is not my native language, so if you guys don't get me, I don't know, just try to indicate it somehow, throw a banana at me or something. Please don't do that, but you would hurt my feelings, so. I'm Zoltán Ávry from Hungary. I'm a software developer and a consultant at my own little company called NextGen Solutions Ltd. And I'm also a lead trainer at Samok Ziyatik, one of the biggest Hungarian training centers. My main focus is on WPF, Silverlight, and Windows Phone 7, of course. And after today's keynote, probably more on Windows Phone 7. And let's talk about validation now. Oops, wrong direction. I'm going to have to get used to it. So what am I going to talk about? In the first part of the session, I'm going to talk about the different design considerations when we are designing validation. What do we have to consider? Like, why do we validate? When do we validate? How do we validate? It involves architectural design and it involves user experience design. So this is the first part I'm going to talk about. Then we are going to talk about different validation scenarios in a problem design solution approach, which means we are going to discuss a problem, try to find the design for it, and finally implement the solution. And the third part is, actually it's not going to be an explicit topic because I'm going to merge it into the first two. But I had to emphasize it because the validation feedback, to customize this validation feedback, is very important. Okay? So, if you are designing an application, you have to consider who are the users who are going to use your application. Well, this is the same with validation. You have to know who are going to be the people who will experience the validation mechanism you have provided, you have built. We have two kinds of users. The first user is a standard user. You know, I don't know, moderators, administrators. They are the standard users with a good intent. They are the users who want to use your application in the right way. It doesn't mean they are going to use it the right way, but they want to do so. And the second group is the, well, let's call them the everyone else group. Let's talk about them first. If we are talking about validation, and if we are talking about the everyone else group, we have to mention hackers and input-based attacks. Well, you know, hackers, they are the not so nice people who want to humiliate us by destroying your application, stealing data, and so on. Well, I hope you know SQL injection attacks. You know, this is the part where you have a text box, you enter some text, and it's going to be appended after a query string, a SQL query string that goes up to the server, and it runs, then comes the hacker, enters some mumbo-jumbo into the text box, and there you go, your application and data is gone. Now, this is something you don't want, but here's the thing. With Silverlight 4, this is not really likely, because most of the time, we are going to use cutting-edge technologies like typed objects, typed queries. On the server side, we are going to use entity framework or link to SQL. They're using SQL parameters and typed queries. So, to tell you the truth, we have to be a real bad developers to make our application prone to SQL injection attack. Even if we are sticking to ADO.NET 2.0, in every ADO.NET 101 course, the first thing to learn is to use SQL parameters to protect your application against SQL injection. So, you don't really have to be afraid of. I'm not saying it's impossible to make your application vulnerable, but it's not very likely. Now, this one is a somewhat more current topic for us, cross-site scripting. Just take a look at the picture. You know bit.ly, right? It's a URL shortening service. You have a long URL, and it bit.ly shortens for you. When you click on the short URL, you navigate to the long URL. Now, someone thought it would be fun to create a long URL that contains some code that is actually run by the browser. And what this code does is that it sends the cookies of the user to a couple of unknown servers and posts it to Twitter. Take a look at the number of total clicks, more than 100,000 clicks. That's more than 100,000 stolen accounts or hijacked cookies. Well, to me, that sounds pretty scary, right? Now, with CLI4, most of the time, you don't have to be afraid of this, because it's not an HTML-based or JavaScript-based technology. It's not, yeah. But here's the thing. If your application that you enter some data puts the data into a database that is being used by another web application that's going to print the data on the content on an HTML site, then you have to be very careful. So my advice is that every string input should be sanitized using HTML encode and decode. Now, when I entered submitted this session, I entered the catchy phrase, all input is evil. Well, the truth is I entered it because it sounds good and it's catchy, and I hope it will have me, it will make me get here. And it did so. But a couple of weeks ago, I Googled it, what it meant, what other developers thought it meant. And I was kind of surprised, because most developers thought that the input, evil input, always comes from malicious intent and hackers. But this is not really the truth. A couple of months ago, there was this big hacker conference where they tried to exploit different vulnerabilities of different browsers. And of course, in a couple of hours, they managed to do so. But you know what? After installing my own browser, I managed to crash it in the first 10 minutes. And I had total control over my computer, which has probably nothing to do with crashing the browser since I had administrative privileges before. But you know what I mean. So remember that your users are going to be the first ones to crash your application. Okay, so let's talk about your users. Let me tell you a secret. Users hate validation. Not just a little, a lot. Okay, now the secret is out, so let me tell you another one. Users hate bad validation experience a whole lot more. Good one, huh? As a user, if I have to fill out a registration form or submit an order, I'm already suffering deeply, because I know there's this bunch of data I have to provide, and most of the time without any help. And when I click the submit button, it will tell me that, oops, I screwed up something. If I'm lucky, it will tell me what went wrong. If not, then it will tell me that validation occurred, please fix it. True story, I spent half an hour ordering an upgrade for a car. So as a user, I'm asking you, why do you let me screw up? I mean, seriously, why can I enter bad formatted data into an input field? Why do I have to click on a button to find out that my password is weak or confirmation failed? Why can I enter text into a text box that only accepts numbers? And I could go on and on. Here's my last secret. Users love to be constrained. They love to be constrained, even if they say they don't. You want examples? Take a look at how different companies traveling in the smartphone business and tablet business write applications and operating systems. They provide highly constrained input controls, input scopes, max text boxes, launchers, choosers, and people love them. You know why? Because they can't fail. No one likes to fail, not even on a single registration form, especially not on a single registration form. So my advice, constrain your input as much as you can, as much as it makes sense, and your users won't mind. They will be grateful. I promise you this. So to sum it up, we have to validate to protect our application, to protect the data and protect the consistency of data, regardless of what kind of input do we have, malicious or not. And we have another aspect, the user experience. Build great UI, build great user experience, use cool controls that helps the users work, that helps the users to be as productive as he can be. If you can, try to avoid validation. If it's not necessary, let me give you a very simple example. Amazon's one-click buy. You know, if you have probably provided your credit card data and other stuff earlier, you just have to click on a single button. And there you go, you bought yourself a book. Dangerous to say, well, I say you got 60 minutes to cancel your order. Also, don't ever rely on the default error messages. Always provide meaningful and descriptive error messages in the language of the users, not yours. They are not geeks, they are not going to understand it. Okay, so don't ever rely on default error messages. Okay, now that we all agree on, I hope so, that we need some really careful design when we implement validation, let's talk about the different scenarios. First, single property validation. Well, that one is easy. You know, you have a single property, you just want to validate it according, I don't know, to a regular expression or something like that. It's not that big a deal. We have another one, the single object validation, where you have just a single class, maybe you have properties in it which depend on each other. Not that tricky, but has some problems. And the third one is the complex object graph, or the so-called domain object validation. Now, that is a complex and a tough thing to do. In this case, maybe you have complex logic on the client and the server, and you have to use both to validate your object. So we have to find a solution for all of them. So let's start with single property validation. As I said, this is an easy one. You have just a single input. Maybe you have a social security number, you have to validate according to regular expression, or you have an age property and you have to make sure that it's between 18 and 90, or you have some other formal constraints like the minimum or maximum length of a string. Well, I have to mention that you have to duplicate the validating code on the server side, because your client can be tricked and hacked and whatever. So you have to make sure that you also validate on the server side. You don't necessarily have to wire the server side validation to the client's side validation system, because a client validation system letting through an object that fails on the server is kind of an exceptional scenario. That means that something went wrong with the client. Well, single property validation is easy, but it has a couple of issues. First, imagine the following scenario. You are performing a code review on one of your colleagues' work, and you can see all these hard-coded strings, hard-coded validation error strings inside it, the code. Then you are like, what the hell? And he tells you that there was this big conference, there was this really smart guy talking about validation, that's me, and he used hard-coded strings, and it worked great. Yeah, I'm not going to be that guy. I'm not going to be responsible for that. So I'm going to use resources in all my demos, throughout all my demos, because that's the correct way to handle strings. Use resource files. And we have a very special validation error. I'm pretty sure that most of you are familiar with the input string is not in a correct format message. You know, when you have an age property of type int, and you bound it to a text box's text property. Then you enter some text into the text box, and you get this error. Now, here's the problem. This format exception is thrown by the converter. Now, if you are implementing MVVM, if you have a validation error that the view model doesn't know about, then it's not a validation error. Okay, so your view model has to know about the validation error. Now, the format exception is thrown by the converter, which means that the property setter never gets invoked. So we have to find a way to trick that and notify our view model about the possible validation errors. Okay, let's see what we can do. Well, CLI 4.0 offers us a lot of choices. One is probably the most popular one, seen by many demos and tutorials and presentations, throwing exceptions in property setters. I mean, really? Not being able to connect to SQL Server. Now, that's an exceptional scenario, but a user providing a weak password, how is that exceptional? Indeed, it's well expected. I mean, it should be well expected. So I think that that the logic of validation doesn't really fit in the world of exceptions. Be careful, I'm not saying that if an exception happens in a setter, that shouldn't be treated as a validation error. I'm just saying that we shouldn't use it to use a custom validation logic. So let's not do that. I don't know how many of you guys know WCF Real Services. That's a cool technology. It has some really cool entities with some really cool properties decorated with more cooler attributes. For example, if you have an email attribute and you want to validate the format of the email address, you just add a regular expression attribute with the corresponding pattern. If you have an age property and you want to validate the range, then you add the range attribute. It's really cool. These entities can handle these validation scenarios, and the data form, data grid, and some other third-party controls can handle these attributes. Really cool. Now, this is what I want in my view models. I want to decorate my view models with these properties. The problem that my view models just can't handle this, can't do anything with it. So we should do something to implement a mechanism into a view model so our view models can support this scenario. I have good news. These controls and classes use the validator class to use attribute-based validation. We can use that class, so we can build a view model base. Also, we can have a couple of cool interfaces like iDataErrorInfo or iNotifyDataErrorInfo to provide feedback for UI. Now, I'm going to prefer iNotifyDataErrorInfo because it basically knows everything that iDataErrorInfo does. And it knows a whole lot more. So let's stick with that. Also, we had this format exception problem. You know, the input string is not in a correct format message. Now, I have some good news again. Okay, our view models don't know anything about the validation error, but a control may know about it. If on the binding you set the validates on exceptions and the notify on validation exceptions properties to true, then a binding validation error event will be raised on the control whenever a validation exception happens. There you go. In the event handler, we can notify the view model about the error if it was a format exception. Okay, we just have to decide if we are going to implement this as a behavior or an attached property. I prefer behaviors because I really don't like to tie XAML, and I prefer drag and drop. Okay, so let's see an example. Okay, let me switch to C. Okay, so far so good. Great. And before I do anything, let me run this one just to see our form without validation. Okay, we have this very cool site where I'm going to make a mistake. Nothing happens. I'm going to remove this one. Nothing happens. Okay, so we need validation here. We need regular expression validation here. We need range validation here and required validation here. Okay. Great. So, I have this core folder with an interface prepared iValidating view model base. Let me open that. Now, this will be a couple of functions that will be implemented by my validating view model base class. Okay, so let me replace this one with this piece of code. So I'm going to be able to add an error from a property, remove an error from a property, or remove all errors from a property. Okay, this one is done. Now, let's go to the validating view model base class. Okay, and implement that one. Oops. Have to reopen this, okay, and move this one to here. Whoops, sorry, my monitor just switched back. Okay, just a second. My computer only, and let's switch back. Okay, and let's go to projector only. It tends to do that. Okay, I'm good to go for a while. Okay, so let's go up, and I have the validating view model base. I'm inheriting from the view model base class provided by the MVVM Lite toolkit written by Laurent Bunion. And I'm also implementing my iValidating view model base with those three functions. And I also have the iNotify data error info interface. Yeah, that's not me. It's a really cool effect, but I haven't programmed it. OK, so I'm going to have a collection of lists. For every property, we can store more validation errors. We have the validate property method, so we can validate a property according to a property value. And I'm going to use the validator class to try to validate a property using the current context on this object with this property name, and push all the validation errors into the validation results list. Okay? If we are not valid, then we are going to add this error with this message. The iValidating view model base members, they are here, the add error, the remove error. This is just plumbing code. I don't want to dwell into it. Okay? And the remove errors. They're all using the error list collection. And I also have the iNotify data error interface. Well, I have the errors changed event. I'm going to be talking about it later. And the get errors, this is going to be used by the controls to get error for property. And I also have a has error property to determine if we have errors at all or we don't. OK, these are just a couple of helper functions. OK, this is done as well. OK, now let's open the third file. This is going to be the registration view model. If you take a look at it, it has just a couple of plain properties, no validation at all. OK, so let me change that. I wish all my programming tasks were that easy. OK, so we are inheriting from the validating view model base. And if you take a look at it, over every property, we have an attribute from the data annotation namespace, required, 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 and regular expression over the email. You can see the regular expression pattern here. And you can see that the email is also required. And in the setter, you can see that if we are going to set the property, we are going to call the validate property defined in our view model base class. And if we are invalid, then we can set the value. Okay. You can also see that I'm using error message resource names. This is because I have defined the resources folder with the resource file. I have a couple of keys here and the validation error messages here. Okay. So all I have to do is to tell the key and the type of the resource, which is validation message resources. Great. Now, at this point, this should be working. Well, kind of working. OK, so let's run it. OK, and now if I hit a tab, you can see that this field cannot be empty. Okay? If I enter 17 here, you can see that the age must be between 18 and 90. If I mistype the format, you can see that we have mistyped the email. If we just don't provide it, you can see that this field cannot be empty. But we have another problem. Let me enter some text into this one. Oops, no validation error. And the view model doesn't know about it. And this is a required field. So what can we do about that? OK, my advice was to create a behavior. So let's open core, and I have the validation helper behavior. OK, I'm going to copy that one. You can apply it to any framework element. Let's think about a text box. If you apply it to a text box, then you can tell it that you are going to use the text property of the text box. You have to bind the view model. And if your view model is an iValidating view model base, then you should get the associated object, which is going to be a property, text box. You should get the dependency property as well. And get the binding defined on that property, on the text property. If you have the binding, you have to check if these properties are set to true. Because if not, then the binding validation error event will never fire. Okay, so if they are set to true, then we are good to go. So let's get the source property name, which is going to be, I don't know, age. And let's subscribe to the binding validation error event. If we did that and we have a formal exception, we can add the error on the property with the provided error message, or we can remove it. It's up to us. Okay, so our behavior is done. Let's close. Oh. And let's apply the behavior. We have to apply it on the registration view. Okay, I don't need you to load that one. And I have to find my text box. Here it is. If you check it, we have the age bound to the text property. Now I'm going to remove this one and copy this code here. This is the same text box, but with the age property and the binding set with the properties notify and validation error to true and validates on exceptions to true. And also, I have this validation helper behavior where I set the view model, the current one, and the data bound property name is set to the text property of the text box. There it is. So let's try that one now. Okay, I'm running it. And I hope I don't have to disconnect my VGA cable. Great. And let me go back to my core validating view model base and let's find the add error method. If it gets invoked, then it means that the view model will know about the validation error. Okay, so let's enter some text here. Let's hit a tab, and there we go. We have the age property. Okay, if I let it run, I have the input string is not in a correct format message. Great, so it seems we have implemented property-based validation. So let's move on. We have to validate now a single object. Now, in the previous example, we were really good to go because we had a couple of properties. Not so hard to do that. But now, we have to make sure that the full object is valid. And we have a kind of a bigger problem, besides that properties may depend on each other. When do we have to run the validation? Because in the previous example, setters were fine. In the setters, we run the validation logic, but we cannot do that right now, because it's not on a simple setter. So, what should we do? Also, we have to find a nice validation mechanism for objects, because the built-in mechanism only provides validation feedback for single properties, not for complex objects. So we have to handle the states of the view model and connect it somehow to the view. So let's see what we can do. I have good news. We have a very cool object called interface called iEditable object. It has a couple of methods, you know, beginEdit, cancelEdit, and endEdit. EndEdit basically means that the editing of the object has ended, you can commit it to the memory. Yay, this is what we need. Because when editing has ended on the object, then we should validate it. Then we should definitely validate it. This interface is used by complex controls, but we can use it, of course, on our custom forms. Okay? If we do this, we should build our own editable view model based class to handle all the plumbing and provide this functionality for the derived classes. And also, we need an isValid property for the validating view model base to know when a view model base is valid or not. I have some good news because the iNotify data error info interface provides the hasError property for that. So that's a problem. Just get off our table. Okay, so let's see how we can perform object validation. Okay, let me switch back to C and pray it's going to be fine. Okay. Let me close these two, and before I make any mistakes, let this one be the startup project, and go to V2, and we know where we have to go. We need an editable view model based class. By the way, all the source code will be available later on my blog, so if you want to take a closer look at it, you can do that. Okay, so we have the editable view model base, which is going to be inherited from the view model base class. Let's copy that one here. If you want to see what happens really here, that you have a begin edit where you clone your object, you have a cancel edit where using some reflection, you can set the original property values back to the current instance. And the end edit, you can forget the old instance. Well, this is it. So we have the editable view model base. Now, let's go to the validating view model base class. Okay. And insert our code here. Now let's see what we got. Well, we can cancel the edit of an order, of a view model base. But we still have to validate. If you call end edit, we have to validate first, and we don't have any errors, then we can commit. Otherwise, we can't. Also, we define now a property to display as a validation error for the whole object, because a single property validation error is just not enough. And also, we define the validate view model method as an abstract method. Okay? So the derived classes will have to implement this one. And now, go back to the booking view model class. You can see that we have a couple of properties like hotels, ticket, hotels, persons, and things like that. And we have some dummy data as well. And let's add this code here. Well, what can we do? In this view model, we can submit the booking, edit, and the editing of the object, and submit the booking details if we don't have any errors. We can cancel it. And here's the important part. We can validate our view model, or we should. And here's the logic. If the arrival date is later than the departure date, then there is something wrong with these two properties. And the object validation error message should be set to this resource as well. Okay, these are from resource files. Otherwise, we have to remove the errors. Great. Now, this thing will only work if we have a begin edit call. Well, data form performs this for us. A data grid will perform this for us, but our custom form won't. So I have an idea. Let's write a behavior for that. Why not? We love behaviors. We check it. We have this edit and focus behavior. And what I want to do, if I have a details form and any of the controls gets a focus in there, then we are in editing mode. This is what I want. But get focus is a rooted event, so we can build a behavior for that. Okay, let's remove this one and add the edit and focus behavior. If you just want a very brief look at it, you have to specify the editable object. Okay. Then we will subscribe to the get focus. Oops, that's a minus. You don't see it. You see it as a minus. Okay? And in the event handler, if the editable object was an uneditable object, we should call the begin edit. Great. So we have this one too. Now, theoretically, we have the validation mechanism. Now let's wire it up with the UI. So I'm going to move to expression blend, because I love to do that. And first, let's find this behavior and apply it. Okay? This was the, oops, that's too many characters. This was the edit and focus behavior. Okay? And if we check the visual tree, we have this grid. So let's apply it on this grid. We have this editable object, and tell it that it should use this view model. Okay? So if I click any of this, it will get a get focus, and we are in editing mode. Great. Now, we should indicate somehow that the object is invalid. Okay, the properties will be invalid. That's okay. But we have to indicate somehow that the object itself is invalid. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to define a couple of states, visual states. Let's call them validation states. And I'm going to add the valid state and an invalid state. I'm not a designer, so don't expect anything fancy. Okay. So if we are in an invalid state, what should we do? If we are in an invalid state, then we have this object validation grid right here. And if you take a look at it, it's just not visible. So let's display it. Also, it has a text block. And if you check the text property of this text block, it's already bound to the object validation error message property, which you provided. Cool. And also, let's make the border of this thing red. If you check the border brush, it's already red, but the alpha channel is zero, so let's move it up. So it's going to be fine. OK, one last question. How am I going to do that the view models has error changes, then the visual states can change? Well, we have a cool behavior for that. It's called data state behavior. So let's drag it and apply it on the layout root and tell this one to bind to the has errors property. And the has error is true, then we are in an invalid state. Otherwise, we are in valid. I wasn't too consistent naming those two. OK, so there we go. We are done. OK, so let me come back here and hit F5. OK, so what we should see right now is a very simple booking site. Let's see how the editable object works. OK, I'm going to hit cancel. OK, this seems to be working. Great. Now, if you check the arrival date, I'm going to make a mistake here and set this one to, I don't know, 16, a day later. And I would try to send it. And there we go. Beside the two properties, I have the red border and the message and the big ellipsis on the top right corner. OK? So it seems that we have simple object validation as well. Okay, let's move on. Now we have a tougher problem, because we have to validate a complex object. To give you a very simple scenario, you have a username on a registration form. And when you enter the username, you go to the server and check if the username is already in use by another user. If yes, then it's a validation error. If not, then it's not. Now, most of the time, with complex object graph validation, you have to have a complex logic system, regardless of validation technique. But this validation mechanism, as you can see, spans through multiple tiers. It has a client-side domain and a server-side domain as well, which means in the case of Silverlight, since it can't communicate synchronously, you have to implement this validation mechanism as an asynchronous validation mechanism. And also, we have a problem with validation states. Just to give you a very simple example, still on the registration form, last input field, a text box with the email address. And you have a network latency, maybe 4 or 5 seconds. The user enters the email address and clicks on the next button. Why wouldn't he? Everything is valid. Well, the problem is, if he would waited maybe 5 seconds, it would have turned out that the email address is already in use by another user. So it turns out that the has error property can lie to us now. So we have to do something about that. What should we do? Well, first of all, I have some good news. The iNotify data error info supports asynchronous validation. This is what the errors change event for. So this problem just got off our table. We are good to go. And now that the has error property lies to us, we have to introduce 3 states. We have a valid state, we have an invalid state, and we have a validating state if we have long-running asynchronous validation. Now, the problem is that in the previous example, we have wired up the view model and the view and the states using the data state behavior. I hope you remember that. But that behavior only works with Boolean values. But now I have an enumeration, so I'm going to need something else. Well, we have Nuget. And you can download the response.mvvm Nuget package for free, which includes a really cool behavior, VSM changer behavior, which we monitor your view model for enumerations decorated with visual estate group attributes and move your view into a specific visual state. Okay, so that's going to be really cool. Also, we should improve our validating view model base. This would be all automatic. Okay, so let's see how we can do that. Okay, this wasn't A, C. Okay, let's close these ones. Okay. And tell them that we are doing the third demo, start page. Great. Okay, and as always, we have to go back to the core and see our validating view model base. Let's scroll down to the bottom, and you can see that we already have validation states, a valid, an invalid state, and a validating state. Okay, so let's add some code to make this one work. Okay, now let's see what we have here. Now we have a validation state property decorated with the visual estate group. This attribute is for the VSM changer behavior that we are going to use. We also have an end async validation, because if you have long-running async validations, you have to make sure that the synchronous and asynchronous validations just don't mess things up. So we should call this one. And after every add error and remove error, we should re-evaluate these states. Okay, basically that's it. I have to make just a little more adjustment. I have to uncomment these and this one. And this one. Okay. Okay, so view model is ready to perform some asynchronous validation. So let's do that. Let's go to the view models, let's go to the registration view model, and let's find the email property. Okay, as you can see, we have a perform additional async validation method here, which is, of course, not yet implemented. Okay, I'm going to add it here. As you can see, we are going to call a web service. And after the call, before the call, we are going to set the state validation state to validating. So we are performing an asynchronous validation. And if we get the results, if the email was invalid, then we will add the error. Otherwise, we will remove the error. And we will indicate that the async validation is done right now. Okay. Now, the next thing we have to do is to wire up the visual states, the validating, the invalid, and the valid state, to the UI. Okay, so let's do that. Let's go to the views. Let's open the registration view. I don't need you to load it. I don't need you to load it. Okay. And first, let me add the VSM changer behavior. Okay, this one here. So as I said, this one will watch for data context, actual view model. And if the visual validation state property will change, it will change the visual states accordingly. What visual states? Well, this behavior uses conventions over configuration. So if you take a look at it, here are my new visual states. Okay? We have a visual state group named validation state. And we have visual states like validation state valid, validation state invalid, and validation state validating. Well, these animations, what they do is just simply enabling and disabling controls. But this is the main thing here. Okay, so it seems we are good to go. Let's run this one again. Oh, for the first time, I don't know. Don't even remember. Okay, and you can see that we are already validating, and the save button is disabled. We have this really nice, not so nice, but we have it, progress bar in the indeterminate state. And now this email is okay, because it wasn't used by another user. Now, let me change this one. Okay, let me enter my other email address. I know that one is already in use. So there we go. We have the validation error. This is already in use. Okay, let me change back. Okay, we get the validation. Okay, save is already enabled. And if we don't use asynchronous validation, we just want to test the simple validation mechanism, we still have it. Okay, so it's still working. Great. Let's switch back again. So we have the complex validation mechanism. Now we have a more serious scenario. Imagine the following. You have a main control, main container, that has a visor in it. And every visor step has its own user control with its own view models. And every view model can be invalid. But the main view model, the master view model, depends on these view models, validate the validation state, whether they are valid or not. But the main view model or master view model just doesn't have a reference to these view models. They are just loosely coupled. So we should find a way to notify the main view model if view models in a certain group are invalid. So how can we do that? Well, my idea is to create a validation service. A validation service that is accessible for all the view models in our application and can tell us whether we have view models in a certain group in an invalid state and can give us those view models and can give us those errors. Now, how we should implement that? We should build a common validation error store, because right now, every view model is responsible for its own validation, storing its own validation systems and errors. So what we should do now is to create a common validation error store. And if we do that, we have to be really careful, and we have to design it to be extensible and to be reusable, as generic as possible. And maybe we should implement it as a singleton. Okay, now let's see that one. Okay, still not A. Okay, close about this. I'm not going to use code snippets because this one is pretty complicated and requires quite a lot of code. So I'm just going to show you the architecture. So in the core folder, you can see that I have a couple of objects here. One of the most important one is the validation group. You can see that you can create objects and assign them to a certain validation group. If you don't assign them to a specific group, they will be placed into the default group. Now, we have an iValidation service. Well, using the iValidation service, you can add validation errors to models in a certain group and remove validation errors from a group or from a model, and we can get the validation errors, all the validation errors, in a certain group. And it knows a couple of other things, but these are the main things here. And it also has a has-error changed event to notify the depending view models if something changed in the validation store. Okay? If you just want to take a very brief look at it, we have this validation service, which is kind of implemented as a generic class which can handle any type of validation errors. Most of the time I use strings, but you can have complex objects as well. I don't want to bore you with the details. This is going to be our validation store, and we have the iValidation service method, so you can add validation errors and to a group and remove validation errors from a model, so and so on. This is just the implementation of that interface. Okay. Now, how are we are going to use that? Well, first of all, in the validating view model base, if you take a look at it, we have a static member, the validation service instance, and we are using validation errors as string types. Okay? We have a certain validation group as well. Okay? And if you take a look at it, the add error adds the errors through this validation service instance to the certain validation group. Okay, now let's see how we actually use that. So in our view models, let's see the registration view model. Now here, we can specify that we belong to the registration validation group. Okay? It's just one thing. Okay? And here comes the fun part. Our main page view model, which is actually dependent from this registration view model, but doesn't know it directly, so it's just loosely coupled. Using the validation service instance, can subscribe to the has-error changed event. And whenever a has-error property changes, we should check the validation errors in the registration validation group. And if we have any validation errors, then we are, the main view model is in an invalid state. If everything is okay, then we are in a valid state. Okay, so that's it. Let's try it. Okay, this is not that one. I have to set this one as a start page. Okay, now it's going to be a whole lot better. Great, so we are validating. Everything is going to be just perfect. Okay, if you take a look at it, I can't click the next button right now. Okay. And let me remove this one. So we have a validation error. Okay, we know that here is a validation error. The object is in an invalid state. Now, this part here inside is the registration view, but the outer container is the main page. And you can see that it's red because it has a validation error, and you can't click the company info, which would be in the next step in the wizard, and you can click next. Okay, so let me set this one back. You can click next now, or you can click the company info. So it's just working. Our main view model knows if there's something wrong in the registration validation group. Okay. So, just to sum it up. When we are designing validation, we have to be really careful. Our first goal has to be that we should provide a validation mechanism that will protect our applications against any kind of input, malicious or not. So security is the first and main aspect. But user experience is just as well as important. You have to make sure that your users can be productive and the users can easily use your application and won't be frustrated by it. Also, if you're implementing validation, there are a lot of gaps you have to fill. Maybe you should implement an architecture like we did here now. By the way, this code will all be available on my blog, zoltanarway.com. So if you want to take a look at it, you can do that later. Well, since it's Vegas, it will be like probably morning, but, you know. And last thing I should advise that there are many choices. You can do a lot of things, but try to be consistent. Because diversity in the end can bite you, okay? So be careful. Try to be consistent. And my last advice, or very last advice, is that you should remember that the best validation experience is when you don't have and don't need validation at all. Okay? Thank you very much. If you have any questions, then you go ahead. Thank you. Just a little bit louder, please, because...
Sorry. Am I on?
Okay. It's much better.
All right. So I noticed most of your examples didn't have any models, and for most of us, anything except really trivial validation is really a business rule. It belongs in my model where it can get reused.
Yeah.
So what's your... If you don't like exceptions, how do you communicate between your model in a view model agnostic way? Because it's the model doing the validation, not the view model.
Yep. I had a version, and I was thinking which one should I bring here, where I had this registration data property, which we used actually. And the attributes were based on the original entity, on the original model entity. And they worked perfectly. I just changed my mind and used this scenario. Okay, so you can implement that mechanism as well in your view model base to use your properties to validate them. Okay, just add an extra attribute, and if you can, you see that this property should be validated, then apply validator.try validate property on your entities. Okay, so that should work too. Okay.
You used the behavior to handle the changed on the text for your validation on that. Is there a reason you use that over a string formatter property on your data binding? So when you entered in text for your age to be 19 and 90, right? So the string formatter will prevent the user from even entering in an alpha key if you've got it set up right.
Yes, you could do that. And also there's also a trick when you, in your view model, the age property is actually a string. I don't like that.
Okay. So it was just a preference reason?
Very simple reason. I just don't like that.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, but you could definitely do that. Okay. Yep.
Well, you showed us a lot of plumbing code that you put in, kind of those core classes and so on. I wanted to know what recommendations you had for off-the-shelf libraries you could just drop in that would have that plumbing code pre-baked so we could just focus on the validation business rules.
So question is, what's my recommendation on how to integrate with those libraries, external libraries?
Right, or particularly, what external libraries would you recommend? What are some of the best add-ons?
Well, personally, I prefer a lot the MVVM Lite Toolkit because it's very simple, it's very subtle, it's very easy to use. There are a couple of really cool behaviors also in the response of the MVVM Lite package. That's really cool because it works with CVI-3 and Windows Phone as well. Okay, for example, the VSM changer behavior, like data state behavior, you don't have in a Windows Phone 7 scenario yet. Probably in Mongo you will have that. So I would recommend those two packages. Those are kind of cool.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. Okay. Yep.
So you use the attributes as a way to kind of decorate your view models for different things. If you have a scenario where your validation rules change or need to be configurable for different reasons, particularly with changing regulations within healthcare, what extension points within the kind of framework that you showed today, where would you kind of put those places pull in and consume?
I don't remember. Maybe I think I have implemented in the view model base the validate property method as a virtual method. So what I would recommend in that case to override that one and apply those custom rules by hand. Okay, so I would do that.
Thanks.
Okay.
You said you were going to put the code examples on your blog. Did you give the address?
Yeah. Okay, it's not that simple. So just let me print it on that. Because my name is strange to you guys. I know that. I should do that, and I should have done that. Sorry. Yep. Yeah, it's my name. I know. Believe me, in my world, in my country, it sounds great.
Okay, and so just go on there and look for blog.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Yep. Tomorrow morning. We are Las Vegas, so I can't promise anything about today.
We never saw that form in the blank state. So like a field that's required, does your validation error show immediately when you open the form because that field starts off as blank?
Well, it kind of depends how you implement validation. Right now, it was a demo, so it validated right away. Okay? That's just because I entered the data. So if you leave those fields empty, it would work great. And if you leave one out and you have the required property, it should just work as well. You can try that in the sample. I will upload it. Okay? You just have to maintain the validate view model abstract method. Okay?
Well, more what I was getting at was that I did something similar in a project where I had to like keep track of which fields the user had, like which fields the user had put the cursor in, to know if I should be showing the validation error, because obviously if they haven't even put the cursor in that field, then they haven't done anything wrong.
Yes, that's right. That's right. But if he clicks the submit, the next, or whatever button, then you should display that. That's
right.
That's, okay. Right. And, so and then this scenario
was,
displays.
So then
it.
When they would click the submit or whatever, I would go through all the fields and trigger validation.
Yep. That's right. That's right. Okay. No more questions? Thank you.